The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Look, so much of the show, all of the show, has been dedicated to an amazing weekend basketball-wise. Do need to give a little attention today to what we closed off the segment with Scott talking about. That's the staff changes on the football side of things. As Brian Jean-Marie left for Tennessee, I think Scott brings up a good point. You know, his job was in doubt. His job was in doubt, you know, in the aftermath of Jim being getting the extension done. You know, there was a dalliance with Christian Robinson from Florida. That didn't mean for sure that Brian Jean-Marie was out, but it certainly meant that he wasn't for sure coming back. And so at that point, you start putting the feelers out. And he was in a situation where he was on the last year of his deal. I think he was the only one of the non-coordinators who this was it. This was the last year. And so here you have Tennessee make a few runs at him after getting turned down a couple of times. They came back a third time, not only saying, yes, they would pay the buyout, which was sizable, that he would get a significant raise as well, and ultimately decided to go to Tennessee. So this is where my man Ira Weintraub comes in, because we had, you know, we had discussed previously about what it looks like, what it could look like defensively. You know, some of the philosophies that they're going to borrow from the Ravens with Mike McDonald coming over and being the DC here. And I know much of that is wait and see, but just your perspective on it being a Ravens fan. But now we have to have that same discussion talking about offense, because they go get the Ravens running backs coach, Matt Weiss, to come over and be the quarterbacks coach. And as I wrote this weekend, while the focus in that discussion is, they hired a quarterback coach. I think it goes deeper than that. And looking at the Ravens' run game, I think is really significant, really important to do. And in talking to folks and, you know, agents, coaches, and in coaching circles, there's definitely a lot of interest in how the Ravens do what they do on the ground. How they do what they do offensively, essentially you're talking about how they do what they do on the ground, because they are an exceptional rushing offense, number one in the NFL. And that is rendered more impressive when you consider that they are the last ranked. I mean, they are at the bottom of the passing statistics. So to be able to do that, you know, when teams don't really, you know, it's respect is the wrong word, but they aren't paying a lot of attention. They are going into games saying, we got to stop the run. They are worried about you throwing the football, and to still be able to do it says something. Now, here's the question for you, Mr. Weintraub. As a Ravens fan, how much of that is you got the best quarterback to ever run the football in history of the game? I'm convinced that Lamar Jackson is that special. I'm convinced that we can say that right now, that there's never been a running quarterback better than Lamar Jackson. So how much of their rushing success, despite teams knowing what's coming, how much of that rushing success is him, and how much of it is schematic? Because the schematic part is what Michigan can replicate, can try to borrow. They can't replicate, try to borrow Lamar Jackson.
Well, you can't replace him at all. So, I mean, obviously, it's a different thing. But right. This is the thing. So you don't have Lamar Jackson, so you don't have that type of player, but you're still going to have a threat of some sort at the quarterback position. You don't have to be a guy that can go 80 on every play, but can you get a first down? I mean, that's really – so the eyeball may be a little – the eyeball is maybe a little different looking at you, but the threat is still there. It's just not the same threat. But what I pick up on with what the Ravens do, taking the Lamar part of it out, is that – schematically, they throw a ton of different run looks at you, but a lot of them may be the same play. But they can run the same play out of like every different formation. And so they throw a bunch of different formations at you. They have a bunch of different base run plays that they can run. But they don't – like, I don't think to me that it's this overly complex thing as much as they're really efficient. They're really good at doing it, and they master very specific things in within the run game. And are there things that, you know, that Greg Roman and that run game do differently than maybe somebody else? Yeah, it's possible. And but coaches do this all the time in the offseason anyway to learn from other teams, right? You're going to pick up on new things. But, when I go back and I started looking at this a little bit last night, but I haven't gone too – I only spend so much time looking at the schematics of the Ravens because I spend so much time looking at what's going on up here in Ann Arbor. But the way they work that run game is – yes, part of it is Lamar. I keep going back to that. But part of it is that they still have a lot of different ways to utilize three or four different kind of backs out of the backfield. Justice Hayes. I just called him Justice Hayes. Justice Hill. And but you have Justice Hill, is different than Mark Ingram, who's different than J.K. Dobbins, who's different than Gus Edwards. Like, they're very different backs, and they find different ways to utilize them in downhill and getting outside the tackles and mixing and matching what the – like, so you don't actually even know. You might think that Hill's going to go outside the tackles, but he goes inside. And so I think that's a big part of it, too, is matching the right – you know, part of that run game scheme with the different personnel you can have at different times on the field. And in the end, the biggest part of it, Sam, is that the Ravens did that with an average offensive line too, which I think is something to keep in mind. The Ravens offensive line at the end of the year was not a great offensive line. They had lost Ronnie Stanley to injury. He was out for the year. They moved Zeus over to the left side, and they were kind of makeshift with the rest of the line. It was not a traditionally really strong Ravens line, even just the year before. And so that's something that also I think is impressive, is that they find ways to get big holes in the run game when they're not necessarily using Lamar in it, and when they're doing it with offensive linemen that were not in the positions they started the year, or they were expected to be, or maybe up to the standards of being a top-notch NFL lineman, and they still got the job done.
Yeah, I didn't see the Ravens a ton in the during the season. Certainly watched them against the Chiefs, watched them a little bit in the playoffs as well. And again, I want to qualify my observations by saying I don't watch them a ton, but what the conversations that they were having during the broadcast, the commentators, and what I saw, it feels like to me the part that you can replicate or try to is what you mentioned with formation. They do a great job of varying formations to achieve matchups and confusion in motion. They do a great job using motion to create matchups and to sort of disrupt looks that they might be getting from the defense. Put them in, positions that aren't advantageous, right there before the snap. They do a great job with that. Now, again, you do have a player that can make that right a lot more often than it's going to be wrong. But what they do with formation and motion seems to be me to be a part that if you're Michigan, you should be able to borrow from. You should be able to take that and apply it to the offensive principles that you at least, I guess I would suspect that that's the hope. I mean, I haven't had any conversations with any of them inside to know what it looks like. And I imagine some of it is they got to figure that out. Right. But clearly. This move is not just about hiring a dedicated quarterback coach. Clearly, because when I first heard about Brian Jean-Marie, as a matter of fact, when I first heard about the possibility it was Friday morning. You might remember me getting the call. I read, I'm stepping away, and I got that call Friday morning about it possibly going down that day. And what I heard at that time was, hey, man, I'm hearing they're looking at the Ravens run game guy. And that could be a bunch of guys, right? who give me a name. And so by the time I got the name, word was out that he was getting hired. And so that's why when I saw that, I said, nah, this isn't just a quarterback thing. this is a run game thing too. And, hopefully it could be. It could be something that really augments what they do.
And Sam, there's another level to this too. This goes beyond the run game. It goes beyond even the offense. This is a guy. If you do more reading and read about what Weiss has done with Baltimore, big time analytics guy, big time.
Yeah,
when it comes
good point.
So it's not just you know, what kind of schematic things with the run game, but there's an analytics side of that too. But he can also impact the defensive side with his analytics. But the other thing that he's got a lot of credit for with John down in Baltimore is helping with game management and challenging plays. Apparently Weiss's challenge ratio is off the charts good, and it's usually you don't have great challenge ratios in the NFL, but he apparently is really good at that. Management of clock, you know, knowing that kind of thing. So there's analytics and game management things that have nothing to do with anything that we're talking about here, but that also has to be a part of why he was hired, because he is excellent at these things. The Ravens rave about those things. And if you're not going to bring that as a part of it, then this move doesn't make as much sense. It makes a lot more sense to me. You throw in what you're talking about with the run game and everything there, but then you throw in that he's a big-time analytics guy and can really advance the program when it comes to using analytics in the right way and clock management in the right, you know, at certain key moments, et cetera. I think that's a big part of this too.
Yeah, and look, I want to make it clear. I'm not being Pollyanna-ish about this. You know, it sounds good. It's from formation and motion to analytics. These are things that look like they could really be major boosts to what they do offensively, but they got to obviously bring it all together. They got to marry philosophies here. And so that's a bit of a wait and see. And so I want to make that clear. But I say, definitely. You know, shoot off fireworks. I'm not saying that to those of you who are raising, like, how's that going to look? How's that going to work? I got a bunch of that. What is it going to look like without Lamar Jackson? I get it. That's a legit question. It's a legit question. But, you know, there are aspects of this that are replicable. So let's see if they can do that. I think defensively is where you look at it and you say that the gamble increased more on defense. There's just no doubt about that. When you consider that now, when you look at the defensive side of the ball, you're talking about going at it with no play calling experience on that side of the ball. That doesn't mean it can't be done, but it's like you know, you're sitting on 15 in blackjack and you're saying, they're saying hit me, you know, at this point. Or maybe it's 16 and they're saying hit me. I mean, it could work, but you know, the gamble just increased when you take away, you know, maybe your, I know maybe too, your most veteran guy and some play calling experience. Now, very, very bright defensive minds that they've brought in Mike McDonald here. Rave, nothing but rave reviews. Same thing with Mo Linguist. When you move George Hilo up, he coached linebacker, so you should be fine there, right? You know, the people are talking about Ron. Here's what you need. I think there are some misconceptions out there. First of all, you need to know that Ron Bellamy played defensive back in Michigan. That's number one. So it's someone say he doesn't have any experience playing the position, as if that's a prerequisite. There are a lot of guys that coach positions they didn't play, but in this position, in this situation, he actually played the position. The other piece is he coached defensive backs at West Bloomfield for a number of years as well. So, you know, someone said, hey, he hasn't ever coached a position at any level. That's not true. He did coach that position at the high school level. Now, you know, to jump into that position essentially as, you know, spring ball starts, I mean, that is, you know, that's a stiff climb, a steep climb, a steep learning curve, if you will. Fortunately, you're in the room with a veteran guy, a guy who's coached the entire secondary before, a guy that can provide some, you know, when it comes to their back-end philosophy, a guy who can provide some guardrails and instruction to help bring the process along seamlessly. So it'd be different if you were just throwing them to the wolves and saying, hey, go coach that spot with no one around to function as, you know, as the check, if you will. But that's there. Now, at the end of the day, is that more of a – I just said it's more of a gamble. If people say, you shouldn't have a guy doing it for the first time. Look, this is where they are. This is where they are. Made a decision to go bolster some, you know, some offensive efficiency. And, you know, the cost of that was compromising that a little bit on the experience side of things on the defense. Again, makes it more challenging, admittedly, but not impossible. So from a recruiting standpoint, you got to believe, you threw some more youth in there. I don't know. We don't have anything to go on with Matt Weiss as a recruiter, but you aren't going to lose anything as far as defensive recruiting from, in my opinion anyway, from BJ to Ron. You know, I think while BJ is an established strong recruiter, I get that. I'm telling you what I know. Ron Bellamy is going to be a really effective recruiter, period. I just have zero doubt about that. So this is more – the gamble isn't recruiting. The gamble is, how quickly that all comes together, defense, because they're marrying philosophies over there too. And then you also have the added element of, you don't have guys that have called defenses before. Well, anyone on that side of the ball that's called a defense before. So, it would be naive to say that that is not something to at least be leery of, to be mindful of as you look at how quickly things start to churn and work. But a lot of youth, a lot of ingenuity, a lot of stamina, a lot of ability to connect with players. Still a lot of reason for excitement, in my opinion, Mr. Weintraub.
I think you're on it, Sam. We go into every year with questions, right? Every year has questions. Every year has different questions. I think this year has some very unique questions that are going to be based on the staffing changes and everything else. There's some very unique questions. I'm looking forward to hearing. I don't know what we're going to hear coming out of practice for these next few weeks as they start practice today, and they're going to go pretty much every other day for the next, 3 weeks or whatever it is. I don't know how much we're truly going to get out of it. I don't know how much is going to be. We hear things in every spring and how much actually none of that really matters at this moment. Right now, what we want to find out is how is the coaching staff working? Is there a cohesive unit that's coming together? Because it's going to take them a little time to come together. I want to hear, right. So they have to get their cohesion. And then it's going to be a process. And this process, I personally don't think we're going to hear a lot about it as far as what's going to make, to provide any kind of an opinion. Even during spring ball.
Yeah, I think to your point real quick, Ira, I think what we hear, I don't know how much we're going to be able to go on it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, good or bad. Like, what are we really going to be able to take from that this spring? How much of that will color what's going to happen in the fall? I think this whole thing this spring is a big learning process.
Yeah, this spring is like an extension of it's almost like you've eliminated a year and you're going back to last year. You never had spring ball, so you never had the chance to have progress in the spring. So now here you are. Let's see where you guys can go. Because some of these guys, even the one, obviously these guys played on the team last year, but they lost a lot of time to develop because spring ball is your development time, a big time amount of that, right? And they lost all that. So, I mean, everyone across the country is going through partially similar things with young guys that didn't have a chance to develop like they would have wanted to last year. So there is that. But this is going to be, maybe part of it, Sam, is that because spring practice is happening during basketball season, we're going to hear less anyway. I don't know. It's just, I think part of that is that for me too, it's so different. Spring ball starts mid-March, mid to late March. That's like the normal time of year here for spring ball. Last year was supposed to be March 19th. The year before was March 18th. I think the year before that was like the 17th or something. That's the normal window of time. We're still usually a month away from spring ball right now, and here we are, day one of spring ball. I mean, can we call it spring ball, Sam? Look outside.
Right.
Winter practice? I don't know what you really want to call it.
Right.
So I think part of that, too, is like – my frame of mind of what I'm expecting to hear right now about football is different than there's a lot, and this is the year of COVID that everything is different. You're talking about NBA finals last October, right? So or whatever it was last end of the summer. So everything is just, your timelines are different. Things are weird. And I do think that it will impact, our mentality of what we're thinking about. But as we start to hear things from practice, yeah, I do think that people need to understand that we're not going to hear a lot. And what we do hear is probably going to be more basic than what we're used to hearing in the past. Mm-hmm. And so be it. It is what it is. You have no control over that. But when we get to the fall, I think we'll be able to start, taking those next steps forward as fans learning more about the team. Right now, we're going to have to take the generic things that we hear about the team, and we're going to try to decipher as best as we can. But for the most part, what we know is going to be happening, they're going to be practicing. And they're going to be learning how to get better as a team, both the coaches and the players. And Sam, you're very good at hearing things behind the scenes and then interpreting it. I think there'll be less of it to interpret, but I think you'll get a couple little things And that's the stuff that we're going to have to run with for the next, you know, 6 months. But I, for the most part, it's just get in there, get work on your techniques, work on your basics, get your, you know, start getting in the basics part of the game plans in that you're going to, you know, especially on defense, which is new. And just slow. I have no problem with a slow progress, a slow build this spring, because it, to me, it seems like you're starting from scratch. You're not, obviously, and no team is starting from scratch, even with teams with new coaches. But it feels like this is a start from scratch moment. New quarterback, some new linemen, new defensive staff, new this, new that. And so let's just build from the ground up and see where it can take you.
Yeah, I, you know, the thing that maybe you can tell the most now is, you know, winter conditioning stuff. And they did this intro series on Twitter with their early enrollees. And man, the one that caught my attention was JJ McCarthy. You know, having seen JJ recently, he looked noticeably thicker. So I asked around him, man, they say, you know, he's already put on 10, 15 pounds. Ira, they say, you know, he's checking in at over 2 bills now. And I know he had fallen below that. I know he was in the, you know, high 180s, 190. So they say he's, you know, in the almost 2 months on, or month and a half on campus now has worked really, really well for him as far as strength and conditioning and nutrition is concerned. They've put some good weight on him. And that's the emphasis, good weight on him or back on him, which is a really, really good thing because, you know, you look at him at this point, he is absolutely in the quarterback mix. Now, you got to look in the portal. If you mean, I made this point with talking to Scott. I know I mentioned on Twitter, people have been asking me, do I think Michigan is going to look in the portal for quarterback depth? Abso-freaking-lutely. I don't think you have a choice. I think you have to. That doesn't mean that they're going to get one, Ira. Because this has to be a two-way. You can't.
That's
you
a really important
say, oh,
part,
I want
Sam.
That guy.
I had somebody ask me. I'm going to see if I can find this. But somebody asked me. I got this email over the weekend. And it was a question about the quarterback at who's transferring? At Oregon, I think. And said something about,
yeah,
you know, is Michigan.
Chuck, yeah, they recruited him.
Yeah, is Michigan looking at him? Like, well, Michigan's going to look at everybody. But who is looking at Michigan is the other part of it. And
right.
Quarterbacks that are at a big-time program, especially if they have experience at the big-time, starting experience at the big-time program, probably not looking at Michigan. That's the thing, right? You're looking at Michigan. Michigan's looking at a quarterback that will come in and compete, but you're not guaranteed anything. And a lot
exactly.
of the kids are looking for a guarantee to be the starter next year, and Michigan can't give that. Doesn't mean you can't find a guy that is unwilling to come in and compete and understands it. You know, maybe there's a guy out there that's got a little experience, wants to become a future coach, and doesn't see pro prospects but has, you know, coaching prospects. You know what? I'd like to learn there. That's the kind of guy that you can get that, you know, an older quarterback that has a little experience but wants to become a coach will be happy to come in and compete for a starting job. But if he doesn't get it, he will also be very happy or content to be your backup because you're going to still get minutes. It's still going to happen. And to be that, you know, to learn how to become a coach, essentially. So that's the kind of guy to me that you have to go find out there. I don't know who he is or if he exists, but that's the kind of guy that you're looking for to meet, because otherwise, or I guess, Sam, the other side of it is play the waiting game. You ever go to a sporting event and scalpers are outside and they're trying to sell you, you know, 100% markup before the game, but then 5 minutes after tip off, the tickets are face value? Or right 5 minutes before mm-hmm. tip-off, whatever it is, well, maybe you watch the portal and you just wait. And you wait. And you contact yeah. guys in the portal and say, we're really interested. And then you know that they may slow play you because they're looking for starting jobs. But, Sam, what else have we talked about with the portal? There are going to be a lot of no spots to land for a lot of guys.
Yes, sir.
So maybe you play the waiting game and look for a guy that thought he could land, you know, transfer from a big program and land at another big program and instead as a starter. And now he is to, you know, well, you want to land at a big program, you have to compete, and you may not start, but you are going to get a chance to compete. That's the most you can be offered. So maybe you play the waiting game and you can find a guy that way too, which means we're waiting till August to hear from the train, you know, and that's a potential too.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, guys, a lot of guys go in the portal, they think they will be able to get those guarantees, right? Well, you wait a few weeks, months even. And that's not offered to them. Well, suddenly the calculus for their decision changes a bit. Now maybe the opportunity to compete at Michigan sounds a lot better. To your point, I think that they are certainly playing a waiting game at other, have been playing the waiting game at other positions. looking in the portal. I mean, think about the positions that you know they are looking for in the portal. You know they're looking for defensive tackles, right? You know they're looking for corners. There's zero doubt about that, and yet there was no movement at those positions here in the initial phase. So that's how you got to look at the portal. Look at it as there are portal phases, right? There's going to be another phase during and after the spring. And I think that there's a
May is going to be a hot time in the portal, Sam. May is going to be a hot time in the portal.
Yeah, they're being very calculated with not jumping at a guy who's in the portal right now, thinking that there could be some guys going in the portal later that would be better fits that could help them more. So keep an eye on that as far as quarterback is concerned, too. That'll do it for us today. Back tomorrow, Towny Top 3, Eric Adelson, Eric Backich. A lot to come. Recruiting roundup, a lot to come tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.